Hello, everyone. Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Matters. I greatly appreciate you joining us. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving holiday and are prepared for the Christmas season. I am excited about it coming. In fact, my wife and I are getting our place ready for our staff Christmas party and very much looking forward to having them join us. All right. Today's topic, a little bit on the heavy side. I'm going to talk about our political climate and how to be a healthy person in an unhealthy political climate. And I'm going to be referencing my assistant, Jacob Ogan, wrote a column for Kentucky Today. I also did a podcast with Lawrence Smith over there about the rise of political violence. And be encouraged, though. I'm not here to just discourage you and get you down, although we need to understand where we are as a country. Some of the polling that's out there, some of what's happened in the last year or so when it comes to serious political violence. But then I'm going to end on a positive note for Christians in particular. What are biblical principles that speak of us engaging in difficult and hostile times? For those of you who are not Christians, I encourage you to, of course, listen in and see what Scripture has to say about how we live through tumultuous and difficult times, and then what Christ says to us as we try to roll through these times of challenge. All right, there was polling data that came out recently that indicates that 3 in 10 Americans, about 31%, either strongly agree or agree that Americans may need to resort to violence to get the country back on course. It's actually, the number is right at 30%. Another poll from Politico and Public First found that 55% of Americans expect political violence to increase. Now, these numbers are changing. They're spread over both political parties. National Public Radio reported that last year, only 12% of Democrats agreed with political violence, and that's in the context of making change, making a difference. The 12% believe that political violence was okay to achieve some kind of positive outcome. That number today, by the way, is at 28%. 28% of Democrats agreed with the idea that political violence is sometimes justified to move the needle in a better direction. Republicans, there's been an increase from last year. Those who accept political violence as a way to make positive change, it's 31% now, agree with the state that sometimes political violence is justified. Friends, I don't know about you, but those numbers are discouraging. Saddened to see that so many Americans in both political parties, it's about the same, about a third in each political party, not quite a third, but a strong number, high number, believe that violence is okay. And here's the bottom line, it's not okay. So what are we gonna do about it? I just mentioned that I'm gonna reference a column that Jacob Ogan wrote, and here's what he said in part. If history teaches us anything, it's that political violence does not end well. The assassination of Julius Caesar launched the Romans into a series of civil wars. The execution of Louis XVI accelerated the bloodshed of the French Revolution and the Reign of Terror, and the murder of Archduke Franz Ferdinand launched Europe into the First World War. Unfortunately, we are not immune to political violence. Consider assassinations of Presidents Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, and Kennedy. 4 U.S. presidents have been assassinated. Attempts on the lives of Presidents Theodore Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, Truman, Ford, Reagan, and Trump have also been made. Also, governors, senators, and members of Congress have all been victims of assassination attempts. Here in Kentucky, Governor-elect Goebbels, back around 1900, was assassinated. Right here in Frankfurt, where I'm recording this program. So we've also seen political leaders and civic leaders assassinated as well. Martin Luther King Jr., who led the civil rights movement. And then most recently, Charlie Kirk, just a couple months ago, an articulate voice to bring Christian principles into the public arena, was assassinated on camera, where many of us saw the horrifying results of that. So while recent polling data is troubling, and I continue to quote Jacob Ogin, it is by no means a historical anomaly. He goes on to talk about how during tumultuous political times, sometimes even people find glee when somebody's assassinated. When Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, people were honking horns in the town square. They were celebrating his assassination. We saw the same with Charlie Kirk in his assassination. With online access and social media access, we saw some horrible examples of celebration. Ogin goes on to say that the way that we work out political differences is a real gift. He quotes Ronald Reagan, 1981 inaugural address. This is what Reagan said. The orderly transfer of authority, as called for in the Constitution, routinely takes place, as it has for almost two centuries. And few of us stop to think how unique we really are. In the eyes of many in the world, this every four-year ceremony we accept as normal is nothing less than a miracle. Stop and think about that for just a moment. That we can transfer power. Every 4 years, we elect a new president. And we've done it without bloodshed. We've done it without violence. And this is not the norm, as Ronald Reagan mentioned so many years ago in his inaugural speech. This is an anomaly, transfer of power done in a peaceful way. Now, we can go back to January 6, 2021, and see where it almost didn't happen there. And yet, our institution was strong enough where there was a peaceful transfer of power. Vice President Mike Pence followed the protocol. He followed the rules. We had Congress and the U.S. Senate following the rules, and we didn't see violence eventually have the last word of that day. The health of the American Republic does not rest on our ability to divide or despise one another, and this is what I'm going to press into here in just a few minutes. But it's in our willingness to live out the American ideals in public life, First Amendment ideals, freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, free press, the right of redress of our grievances to our government. These are First Amendment freedoms. And that's one reason why I believe we haven't experienced extreme violence, where there's been overthrowing the government, toppling the government, like we see in so many places around the world. Here's the call that Jacob Ogin put out there, that Americans must reject the lure of political violence and embrace the call to govern ourselves with reason, restraint, and respect for life. The miracle of the American political system, as President Reagan called it, depends upon our doing so. Well said, Jacob. Let's press into this. So how do we remain healthy in toxic or unhealthy political times? First of all, you've got to consider who you are. Know who you are. Know your telos or your purpose. From a biblical worldview, you are an image bearer made in the image of God. You're made to walk with God and spend eternity with Him. You need to know what a healthy life looks like. What does a good life look like? Then you need to surround yourself with good, positive influences. Have positive inputs into your life. And at the same time, you fence yourself off from negative and unhealthy inputs. There's a saying that goes, you are what you eat. Now, if you have a high fat, high sugar diet of processed foods, your body will not like you. That's a fact of life. Your body will not function as it should. And you're going to feel terrible. You're not going to do well. In the same way, if you consume negative, suspicious, conspiratorial, anger-charged media and news, it will shape your psyche, inform how you relate to others around you, especially those who have different beliefs and values and approach life from a different perspective. Right now, much of the news media that's out there conforms us to be in a tribe, and you're plugged into that media outlet that's telling you how to think, how to believe, how to behave towards others. We live in more and more a tribalistic society. Some of you may have heard the Oxford English Dictionary. Every year they have a word of the year. Well, just the other day, they came out with the word of the year, which is rage bait. Rage bait. If you don't know what it is, you've probably seen it. But rage bait is online content meant to provoke and stoke anger in order to get clicks and engagement. It's there to stir controversy and to be sensational. And many, particularly social media outlets, use that as a way to suck us into their vortex. Now, as soon as you click on something that looks outlandish or outrageous, as soon as you click on it, your interest is being tracked and it's being plugged into an algorithm. And similar content will be fed into your feed or put into your feed the next time you log in. That's how online platforms work, whether it's YouTube or Facebook, X or TikTok. They're all vying for your time and attention. And there's a reason why they call this the attention economy. And it's a train wreck that gets our attention. Once you get sucked into watching a train wreck, it's hard to look away. By the way, just a little test here. If next time you pull up your social media feed, and I think I'm probably talking to 90% of the audience, most people are on social media in one form or another. And next time you pull it up, see what that feed is, whether it's a Facebook feed, or this is a static feed. What are the topics there? The people who are coming up and what's the topic? Or if it's a video feed, like the Reels or TikTok, what is coming up? That's an indication of what you have been looking at in the past. That's an indication of your interest and what has your attention. Now, here's the reality, friends. When you are paying attention and spending time to online content, spending a lot of time on various social media accounts, it means that you're spending less time with real people and you are in less real relationship with others. In extreme cases, this leads to isolation, which according to the U.S. Surgeon General, isolation, social isolation and loneliness are public health hazards. In fact, it's been said a couple years ago that we are in a public health crisis because people aren't connecting to other people. They don't have the relationships they need to remain healthy human beings. Now, research indicates that health risks of social isolation are comparable to smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day. When I saw that, I was floored. We all know that smoking isn't good for us, but when you're socially isolated, when you're not in good relationship with other human beings, there's an increased risk for heart disease, stroke, dementia, anxiety, depression, and ultimately it leads to premature death. And this is from, again, the U.S. Surgeon General and the Centers for Disease Control. They have studies that indicate this. That's alarming, friends. That should catch our attention, and we should say, hey, what's going on? Why are we like this? What is leading us down this path?
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. Have you found yourself frustrated and angry about the direction of the country? Maybe you're watching Fox News and you see what's happening in Congress or in other parts of the country. Let me encourage you to turn your frustration and energy into a positive direction. Have you considered running for local office? And listen to me for a minute. You can have a greater impact on local elections and on policy decisions if you serve in local government. School board, for example, they set curriculum decisions and tax policy. How about city council or fiscal court? These are very important elected offices where you can have a positive impact on. Consider running for local office. CPC is bringing candidate training events all across the state, and we'd love for you to join. If you've ever felt called to run or interested in running, come on and join us. You can find out more information at the Commonwealth Policy website at commonwealthpolicycenter.org. Go ahead and check it out, and we hope to see you in the fall.
Now, of course, there are large swaths of people who have no real friends and they have few meaningful relationships, and they've swapped out this virtual world, this social media digital ecology that they're living in, from a real human ecology where you have relationships with other human beings. Samuel James, who's a writer, he writes for, he's on Substack. He wrote a book a couple years ago called Digital Liturgies. I've had him on this program. Feel free to scroll back to about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. He was a guest here, but he wrote this book, Digital Liturgies, about how social media and the digital ecology that we're all living in, how that is changing us as human beings. And I'm going to share just a few of his thoughts, some of the real high point thoughts that he shared there. But Samuel James said this, as much as we might tell ourselves we go to the internet and social media to be plugged into what's going on in the world, many times we are logging on to escape it. Oh my, if I'm honest with myself, and after I've been there, I do want to know what's going on in the world. But I also realize too, personally, that I'm in a whole different realm. Like there's nothing that is demanding of me when I go to check the Facebook. There's nothing that is demanded of me. It's just a one-way street where I can scroll, I can choose who I want to listen to or what I want to see. Whereas in a real relationship, there's back and forth, there's give and take, there's conversation. And in a real relationship, you're present, physically present. You're engaging. You're using a different part of your brain, by the way, when you're present with a person and in dialogue with another person. Friends, that's not so when it comes to the internet and social media. Many of us, if we're honest, we go there to escape it. And even if we don't verbalize that, the reality is we're actually escaping real relationships. James said in another part in his book, Digital Liturgies, that social media is algorithmic design to elicit our anger so as to command our attention is nothing less than a moral crisis. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I would say that this social media climate that has been in place, I think Facebook came into being in 2008, sometime around there. So it's about 17 years. We have a whole different universe that we're plugged into that has shaped us, our thinking, how we relate, and it's bringing about anger. And I'm arguing that this social media universe that we're in has led in part, not all, but in part, I think it's been a great contributor to the political violence that we're facing today. Last quote I'm going to share from Samuel James is this, that pixels are not created in God's image, people are. It is a holy thing to be with another human being. It is, in fact, our eternal destiny. James is saying something very clear. There's other people are image bearers. They have intrinsic value and dignity and worth. The pixels you see on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, those aren't image bearers. In fact, it's not real. People are image bearers. And we've got to work harder on relating better to real people. Why? Because James is saying we're going to be spending eternity with real people, with God in a new heavens and a new earth. So God has made us to be in real relationships with real people. In fact, He first created us to be in a real relationship with Him. God created Adam and Eve in His image, put them in the garden, gave them work to do. We know the rest of the story, right? They ate the forbidden food, the fruit. They were kicked out of the garden. The fall touched every part of life, deeply touched the relationships that Adam and Eve once experienced as perfect. The only way that those relationships can be restored is through Jesus Christ. This is part of the Christian story where Jesus came to restore all things, to put individual human beings in right relationship with God the Father. Once that happens, then these human beings can be in right relationship with other human beings. So how do we live this reality out? Well, for the Christian, we spend time in the Word every day. We read, we meditate, we ponder, and we commune with God. This also means that we live in community with other believers. And it's not on social media that we are in real community. This is not on X. It's not on YouTube. It's actually in church, in Bible study, in prayer groups. That's real community does and is involved with. Now, as you spend time in community and in the Word, you're being transformed. It's a ground level reality for Christians that tells you who God is, who you are, and how you should relate to others. Facebook and X have nothing to do with his friends. It's the Word and it's other people and it's being in community with them. Scripture speaks a lot of how we're to think and proceed and what healthy life looks like. I think of Micah 6:8. He has shown you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you but to act justly, love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. 2 Timothy 1:7 tells us God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and a sound mind. Paul was constantly telling the early church to not fear, do not be afraid. Jesus was constantly telling his people, fear not. Why? Because they were living in fearful times. And friends, we live in fearful times as well. But Jesus says, don't look at the world, look at me. Another passage you see here, 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26, speaks of posture and approach to a difficult situation. This passage says, and the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but must be kind to everyone, able to teach, not resentful. Opponents must be gently instructed in the hope that God will grant them repentance, leading them to a knowledge of the truth. Friends, you see this language over and over, especially in the New Testament, to be kind, not be quarrelsome, able to teach, not giving into resentment. This is part of who a Christian is. And if we're honest with ourselves, we struggle with the flesh and with the way we've related to other people before we came to faith. That's just part of being human. We are not perfected on this side of eternity. But God gives us a new way of doing things, a new path, a new model, and we see over time as we walk with Him, as we spend time in the Word, as we're in community, we see that our character slowly begins to change. One more verse. Jesus says in Matthew 5:44, you've heard it said that you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Actually, that's verse 43. Verse 44 says this, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Radical. I mean, the way that most of us would want to do it, man, we're going to crush our enemies. We're going to keep at bay those who are persecuting us. But Jesus says, no, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. He goes on in verse 45 to say that so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. Friends, do you love your enemies? I'm working on it. I don't know how that looks in every situation. I do know this. Jesus said it, and it's my job to figure out how does that look in my life? How does that look practically as I relate to others, especially those who do hate me? I get people from time to time that let me know that. We get hate mail, or we've messages on our voicemail from time to time. Not often. It depends what season we're in, but I've had that. I've had people tell me to my face some ugly things. But I know this. Jesus says to love your enemies. So how does this look in the public arena? I've got a passage here, Colossians 1:15 through 23. I'm going to close with this thought, beginning in verse 15 of Colossians 1. It says, the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He's the beginning and the firstborn among the dead, so that in everything, the cross. Couple of takeaways here as we close this out. Verse 17 says, in him all things hold together. Friends, it's not in today's social media ecology that all things hold together. It doesn't say that Twitter and Facebook and YouTube are the things that are supreme, even though it might seem that way, or the greatest influences. Christ holds all things together. He's not only the creator, but he is the sustainer. He's holding the very universe together, and he holds our lives together as well. So here's a takeaway for public engagement is that we do not enter public life from a place of fear or of panic. Stop clicking on the rage bait, okay? If you're afraid all the time, and if you're living in fear, ask yourself, what are you doing to bring about that fear? Friends, the world is not out of control, even though it might seem like it. Christ is holding the world together. Do you live with that reality? And Jesus is reconciling all things, things in heaven and things in earth. That means he's restoring creation itself. He's reconciling people to God, and he's bringing peace where brokenness reigns. Have you ever stopped to think about our work as Christians in the public arena is fundamentally reconciliation work? Now, we point people to the peace that Christ alone can bring. He takes away our anxiety. He displaces our fear. He gives us the peace that passes all understanding. When you have put your faith in him, and when you begin to follow him, your fear and your anxiety is replaced by the peace that Christ can only give. His peace is redemptive, it's restorative, and it comes in the shape of a cross. Let me encourage you to, if you're fearful, if you are angry, if you're prone to violence, we started out by talking about the violence, and more people are resorting to it, pray. Ask God to take away your fear and your resentment and your hostility towards those on the other side, and then give room for God to work. Ask him to work in your life. That's a prayer that he will answer. And then see what happens. All right, friends, thank you so much for joining me on the Commonwealth Matters. May God bless you, and join us next time.